Welcome, everyone, to tonight's episode of Pivotal Change. I'm your host, William Kahn, and as you know on the show, we talk a lot about careers, the changes to your companies, the leadership, how to enforce and live out your values. But today, we're going to be emphasizing relationships and the most important relationships that matters. We're going to be talking about marital relationships, maybe sprinkling in some kids there as well, and how these relationships absolutely define you and cause you to overcome crisis, experience crisis, or have success or failure on your journey. Most of the time, there's all kinds of patterns that develop and can be identified, maybe some small moments that build up to big disconnections. But we're going to have a conversation today with Paul Zohov, MED, who is the founder of Marriage and Communication Coaching. Paul brings over 30 years of professional experience as a chaplain, domestic violence counselor. He's got a master's degree from the University of Virginia. He is an expert, and he is working in Tucson, Arizona, just helping couples and families strengthen their communication. He's going to be my very special guest today. And Paul, the author that you have, we're going to talk about your book, Recipes for Life, the Marriage and Communication one as well. Thank you for coming on the show and taking this time for us today.
Thank you for inviting me to be on your show. I'm looking forward to a power hour.
Yeah, we're going to have a good conversation. I think it's going to be very powerful for a lot of people. So, Paul, I always tell my audience to go ahead and write down, take notes, jot things down as they watch or listen to the show. And, of course, we're pressed up against the hour and the commercial break. So I want to just jump right in with the first question about maybe some habits. And a lot of people, if they've been married or even in a long-term relationship looking to get married, they know that, man, I could have changed or done something different. What's a prevention habit that you wish every couple could learn before marriage?
Well, imagine your marriage as a bubble. A bubble is very useful because it allows you to identify your boundaries. And once we have boundaries, we can ask the question, is what I'm about to do or say belong in our bubble or not? If yes, keep going. If no, stop. And if unsure, communicate until we are both agreed that this belongs in our life. So starting out with a useful image of a bubble in which you are a member, your children are members, and our us, that greater space of bubble. That's clear. If I say something that's not clear, let me know.
Oh, I'll definitely. That is definitely clear. And I really like that because nobody wants contamination in their bubble, right? Oh. That's the space where you're going to breathe and live in. And I think that's pretty good. So, you know, if people can grasp that pre-marriage or maybe just during marriage and say, hey, let's work on our bubble, why do so many people decide to possibly wait until the relationship is already some type of stress or pressure before they start taking communication and bubble preservation seriously?
Well, often it's the case that one of the partners says, it's about time for us to get support. And then one of the other partner says, no, we'll talk about it. We'll work it all out. And then after a while, they finally agree, oh yeah, we do need help. So people like to look good. People don't like to admit that there's something wrong. They don't like to feel vulnerable. And so they would tend to resist getting the support they need, for instance, for myself, to provide the life they're looking for. So postponing, delaying is not a good, it's not a good life strategy.
Yeah, that avoidance, that procrastination of saying this is a real issue or this is a real problem and we need to address it. They're trying to preserve that image as long as possible. Is that what you're saying?
That and people, I think counseling has a bad rap. Mm. Now, there's a lot of bad TV about counseling. So they're afraid that they'll have to reveal and dig and da-da-da-da. Well, marriage and communication is about skills. You don't have to understand a whole heck of a lot more than just follow the recipe, like from my book, which we'll talk about later. So people are a little afraid of exposing themselves by, well, there's no psychotherapy. Has a bad rap. What we do isn't therapy. It's really more related to coaching.
Well, I like that. Okay, I like what you just said there. It's a lot more related to coaching. You know, tell me if you follow along these lines as well, because I'm trying to be more into preventative than I am anything. Go ahead and prevent the problem instead of deal with the problem. And, you know, I talk to people and I say, hey, you go to the doctor at least once a year for your yearly physical, right? Just to see if your heart is okay, your vision and ears are okay. You go to the dentist, you go to these, like I just said, eyes and ears. You go to these four people to make sure your body is okay. But do you go preventatively to marital counseling, parental counseling, business coaching, some of the stuff that's bigger and healthier, like your most important relationships? And you just said the word coaching, and you can learn a skill set that will allow
Yes.
you to, instead of getting into what people are afraid would be the mushy gushy stuff, if I'm gonna make pretend to paraphrase.
Not really interested in mushy gushy stuff. We don't
Right.
spend any time in the past longer than it takes to get to the future right now.
I like that. You don't spend any more time in the past than what it takes to get to the future right now. I like that. I hope people wrote that down. So, what are some of the early warning signs then? If people are not taking this preventative caution, but they start seeing these warning signs that they're moving from connection into this protection mode, can you identify some of that for us?
Well, one of the issues is that, taking a step back, we don't learn communication skills in school. They're not there. There's no fourth R: reading, writing, arithmetic, and relationships. Not there. Not in this country, anyways. And so we graduate our children with the inability to get along with the ones they're going to work with, work for, or married. So there's a huge deficit in skill and capacity. Marriage and communication. So that underlies most of what it is. And more to your question, there are five love languages Gary Chapman teaches us in the book called The Five Love Languages. And people don't feel loved in quite the same way. Some people like to be appreciated. That's me. Some people show love by acts of service. It's my spouse. And unless you know who's listening and how they speak, you can make a lot of mistakes. For example, quick example, my spouse likes to change the sheets every week, more than I would on my own, I will admit. And I might be reluctant to change the sheets when she wants us to change the sheets, but my marriage shows up and says, listen, if you speak her love language, she'll feel loved. And if you choose to speak her love, and she, together with her, we'll change the sheets. And when she says, thank you for stripping the bed, I feel loved because words of affirmation are mine. So a terrific relationship isn't more complicated than changing the sheets.
I like that a lot. I've heard somebody say something, it's not more complicated than emptying the dishwasher in a very similar phrase. But yeah, Gary Chapman's Five Love Languages, I think, has helped and saved a lot of marriages. I think you finding a direct coaching application to stuff like that, like you just did in your example of like, let's just change the sheets. I think that's what people need to hear and understand. So those are some pretty good things. So if we get into the situation where somebody's feeling maybe a little unloved, there's some type of not normal conflict that pops up. Communication patterns, possibly even becoming dangerous and risking, some spirals or the four horsemen, if you're familiar with them. What can we do to keep them from becoming truly dangerous to the relationship?
Well, you want to stop the train before it leaves the station, using a metaphor from maybe my generation. But really, the key, when you're us, another way of looking at it, there's an us when you get together. An us is greater than the sum of its parts. And there's special language for an us. We, us, ours, and together. The more you speak them, the more us we get. When you were an individual on your own, the language of I, me, and mine was appropriate because that's all you had, you. But once you get together with somebody, there's an us is born. And the special language of us is we, us, ours, and together. And there are a number of communication skills that I will teach given the opportunity. But as soon as you're feeling uncomfortable, things getting too quiet, you're feeling taking something personally, you want to just stop the train before it goes any further. And the way you do that, by the way, and I may repeat myself in the future, yes, it seems to me that I'm feeling uncomfortable here. Yes, it seems to me that there's something for us to talk about. Yes is a great way to start any conversation. It means I'm responding, I'm not listening, I am listening. I'm listening. I heard what you said. And then you say, and let's look at this together. You don't have to be down the rabbit hole longer than it takes to say yes. It's like dialing the phone. Yes, I'm responding. Yes, I hear you. Yes, I understand what you said. And let's take it along together. Let's have a cup of coffee. That's
I like that a lot. You put in several things that you already talked about, the preventative, you got the self-reflection. You're saying like, ooh, I can feel myself getting fired up, getting a little, sensitive about this. And then you're putting in that language as well, saying, hey, I'm going to identify it. Yes is a good positive motivator. I'm guessing people feel more assertively heard when you say, yes, I'm recognizing, and then you're using the us language, together language. Why don't we talk about it? We sit down and deal with it. And so those are things that you're putting into practice. Do you find that that helps to build momentum, before that they can practice those things before anything really falls apart?
well, it stops a lot of the damage.
Okay.
If you say yes, you're connected. If you say and, that creates the next. So you don't have to be in a problem longer than it takes to say yes and an and.
I like
There are
that.
a
I
few
like
other
that a lot.
keywords. Really, what we're witnessing in our society is a lot of tragedy.
Yeah.
That's completely unavoidable. And when we teach it to our children, our future grows.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about that tragedy here in just a second. We're going to stick a pin in the conversation. We'll be back with more Pivotal Change and Paul right after these messages to maybe create a safe environment and avoid tragedy. Stick with us. Welcome back to Pivotal Change from the commercial break, and make sure that you stay connected with Pivotal Change and all of your other Now Media TV shows. Even if Pivotal Change isn't your favorite, which I know it is, you can find everything from news, culture, other leadership and business shows on the website. Go to nowmedia.tv, or you can go to Roku and iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming. You can get English, Spanish, anywhere, anytime, even on the move. If you can't sit down and watch an episode, you can listen to the podcast. Nowmedia.tv is where you find it everywhere. And we're going to continue another one of your favorite episodes by continuing to talk with Paul Zohov. And we're going to get back into this marriage and communication coaching. And we're going to talk about his book here in a little bit. But we were talking about early on in the episode about a safety bubble. And then we were ending the segment about the yes and the confirmations and creating safety. So if you get into it, Paul, why does the yes, I hear you, or the yes, and we need to work about it create safety, even when there's probably not any agreement yet?
Well, yes means I'm responding, I'm not reacting. Yes means I'm listening to you. Yes means I heard what you said, which, by the way, can be a gift all by itself, because many of us live lives not knowing anybody hears us. And the and comes next. And that allows us to open up the future. Anything after and is next. So you actually have a control, influence on how the conversation, how our relationship will go. Yes, and when's a good time for us to talk? Yes, and how about we pick this up off after dinner? Or someone says, how about breakfast? Yes, and how about scrambled eggs? So between a yes and an and, you have a can opener to the future. The third element is being very aware that when I speak and you listen, your mind automatically goes to, is it good? Is it bad? Is it right? Is it wrong? Do I agree or do I disagree? And if what I say to you doesn't match what you wanted to hear, we will stop listening, stop communicating, and argue about whose truth is truer, whose reality is most real, and who's right and who's wrong. No communication, no listening. And that's why we need the word seems. Seems saves us a lot of time and a lot of discord. Seems means something we can talk about, where truth is something we get to argue about. So between yes and seems, you're on your way to communication. Seems to me we've never talked about that. Seems to me we bring up the past again and again. Seems, because then we don't get hung up on who's right and who's wrong.
I like that a lot. And again, I'm going to really home in on such a simple word,
Please do.
scene, that, I could sit here and I thought maybe we've dealt with an issue and my wife and I can move on, but she comes back and brings the issue up again. And I could just say, well, it seems like we haven't discussed this enough for you. And then that immediately affirms her and she knows, okay, he's listening and taking it seriously. And now we can sit down and maybe get it to an actual conclusive and closure-based statement. And I would imagine that creates a lot of safety. So does that help people like change emotionally when someone actually feels heard before they feel corrected? And like you said, my true is truer than your truth. What's the connection, the mental connection and the communication results to that?
Well, people can spend a lot of time arguing about whose truth is true or who's right and who's wrong, and my point of view versus your point of view, and you can waste a lot of time. Seems to me this is a good thing for us to talk about. And when shall we talk about it? Or perhaps it seems to me we got off on the wrong foot. Can we restart over? Seems to me this restaurant's too cold. Can we get someplace warmer? Between a yes and a seems, you can keep yourselves together and not get hooked up and taking things personally and pointing fingers. Yes, and seems. Remember those three words, because a seems will get you a conversation where a truth will get you an argument.
Okay, a lot. Taking notes because hey, this might help out in my marriage. So this is working good. So when you're doing this, you're putting yourself again. We know we need to listen to our partner. We need to listen to our spouse. We need to listen even to our business relationships and our subordinates and our superiors. We need to listen. But a lot of time, people like listening makes me inferior, makes me feel like I'm surrendering or losing or the lesser in the situation, or maybe somehow just me being quiet and listening is a silent admission of fault of some type. Why does that seem to confuse so many people and put them in a position where just being silent for a little bit and listening makes us have those negative feelings, thoughts, and reactions?
Well, there's a knack to listening. And someone says, "This is my point of view." The person who you're talking to says, "Yes, what I hear you saying is that this is your point of view. Did I get that right? If yes, keep going. If not, rephrase." So listening is not passive at all. It's really called, in places, called active listening. It's a little bit like a volleyball game. Seems to me I'm bored with my Chinese restaurant. But your partner says, "Oh, what I hear you saying is that we might want to look at another Chinese restaurant." Did I get that right? "Yes, tell me more." But there's nothing passive. There's an active engagement. The more listening you have, the more communication you have.
You're making me think about that too. Is definitely the more listening you had, God gave us two ears and one mouth, right? So we should do twice as much listening. That's one of my favorite sayings I learned back probably maybe middle school, but it's helped a lot. And I do too much talking as it is. The listening part of it too. I was thinking as you were speaking and responding about how we feel like we're surrendering or losing control, but the way you phrased it, and not that it's a power struggle at all, but you actually gain understanding and you gain power because it's very powerful to truly understand the other person's position, even if you don't completely agree with it. To know it and understand it allows you to react and change and even have influence towards that better path together instead of just having no clue where they're coming from. So yeah, good share on that one. Anything to add on how that affects the bubble, makes it increase or decrease or stay pure on the inside when you do that?
Well, as you mentioned, the bubble is a safe place, and you have boundaries. Nothing goes on in the bubble that doesn't we don't agree on at all. So we want to have the basic communication skills of yes, ands, and seems. We also want to be also our next best friend is the word tends to, because we speak, "Oh, you always," and "I always," and "we always," and teenagers are. We tend to speak declaratively, or at least it sounds like declaratively. And when you do that, you lose listening because you're turning off their listening, and now they're figured to answer you and not listen to you. So we lose communication. So when you use tends to, we tend to communicate.
I
We
like that.
maintain a high level of listening, more communication.
Yeah. I can see a lot of people do that. And I feel like we're in a more hyperbolic society than we were 20 years, 50 years ago. And people just say, oh, it's always like this, or it's the worst thing ever. Instead of me being like, man, that's really bad. I don't like it. Oh, this is the worst ever, and I don't ever want to see it again. Or that person's, and they'll give these expletives instead of just being like, I don't like that guy. I'm going to stay away from him. And they, wow, and they ramp up and everything, social media, and that seeps into our marriages. And just saying it tends to be that when I show up late from work because I got stuck on overtime, that we end up having a fight later that evening, right? And then people can start checking themselves to say, is the problem overtime? Is the problem disruption of expectations and so forth? So if we get into a position where we feel like emotions are getting high, how can a person then start listening without just immediately becoming defensive or attacking?
Well, bottom line is, if you're not 100% present, you ought not be talking. And be very, very generous that maybe you're 90% present, which is very generous, by the way. That 10%, you're not going to hear something. You're going to mishear something. You're going to misunderstand something. And anything you say from that moment on is garbage. So if you're not 100% present, you're going to say, hang on a second. Let's take a coffee break and come back and start over. Do not continue on down the rabbit hole long at all, because you don't want to wind up someplace you don't want to be. So first, if you know, a person like I have some people come here from UPS, they come home and their partner has been speaking baby all day and they want to talk to an adult. But the UPS driver arriving home says, hang on a second, I need to get out of my Browns, take a shower, and then I'll be right back and I'll be with you. Do not speak longer, just stay 100% present. Yes, I hear you. I've never really thought about this subject. Give me some an hour or two to think about it, and then we'll talk about it. You don't want to force communication down our throats, shall we say. If you're not here, stop things until you are here.
I like that. So I heard you say two things. Is one was a little reactive, and I'm just going to relabel it as I've heard it say, like, let's hit a reset button, right? Like maybe
Yes.
I'm in the middle of a task and my wife approaches me and says, hey, can we talk about this? And I try to continue the task. Like you said, graciously, I might be 90% present. I miss something. Anything I try to say after that ultimately is garbage because it has missing or false information. And then the other one you said was preventative. Like, hey, you come home from work. And so I was in law enforcement for 12 years and I was in gear. I might have just literally fought somebody half an hour ago. And then I got to come home and I got to take off my uniform, possibly even wash off the blood and snot from the drunk, right? And then I got to check out and say, okay, I'm in dad mode now. Just let me get from one waffle brain box to the other and then let me be present. Instead of meeting at the door and saying, hey, can you do this and take the garbage out and change his diaper? Da, da, and I can't do that. So I'm hearing you say that there's a preventative version and a reset button version of this. Is that an accurate assessment?
Oh, if we ask, we later on we'll talk about personality types, but
Okay.
basically you want to be present because that's the only place you have power right in
That's right.
this moment. If you've had, there's you might want to say you want to create a mud room, like a farm has a mud room.
Yeah.
When you arrive home, you take off your wet clothes, your boots, and all the mud and the stuff before you track it into the house, which
Well,
is
Paul, let me
odd.
jump in right there because I want to transition with that thought here in just a second. And
Please.
we've our halfway point. So let's cut to commercial break. We'll be right back with Pivotal Change and more Paul right after this.
Many minutes are we into this?
I'm your host, William Kahn, and we're back with Pivotal Change. And we are continuing this wonderful conversation about relationships and specifically concentrating it on marriage with Paul Zohav. He's an MED and he's written books. He's got a lot of industry experience in how to help repair damaged marriages and also prevent them from getting damaged in the first place. And we were just pivoting to talking about how to preventatively or reactively reset from some areas where emotion drive. Maybe some pain is setting into the conversations or the relationship. And so sometimes that leads into some darker things. So, Paul, tell us a little bit about how pain affects and seeps into a marriage, and possibly even to the point where there's a betrayal or infidelity that could occur.
Well, if we start looking at the love languages, some person expresses love by acts of service. My spouse is that way. And I know that if I choose to do acts of service, she will feel loved, right? And I like quality time, one of the five love languages. And she knows that I like quality time, so she may choose, let's go out, let's go shopping together. Let's go to Costco together. Any sort of quality time feeds, nourishes my sense of being loved. And infidelity, we're jumping ahead a bit, but there, unless you know how to love the person you're with, you can make a lot of mistakes. Someone said, I've been taking care of all these things. I am responsible for this. I'm responsible for that. Can't you see how much I love you? But the other person's waiting to have quality time and be appreciated and acknowledged. And unless you know how to love the person in their love language and vice versa, you can step on each other's toes completely unawarely. A high awareness of each other's love language is essential to success in a marriage.
So if somebody has like a bucket, and no human can keep their bucket that lets them feel loved all the time, so you have to keep trying to put these love bricks into their bucket. If you're throwing in the wrong love language, you're throwing these bricks into a bottomless bucket. They're just passing right through, and the person's never filling up and feel loved. But if you put in the acts of service or quality time bricks, that's that warm weight of love that they're feeling. And so how can some of this relate to ultimately things that become disconnection or avoidance, just any type of vulnerability from what feels like unmet needs, and then ultimately possibly could turn into betrayal and fidelity? What's the buildup?
Well, if I don't feel loved by you in my love language, I become often vulnerable to finding it with somebody else. One calls me up and says, something's wrong with my wife, says he. And after listening a while, I understood that he's so busy, dedicated to his business, but she's waiting to have playtime. And so she finds someone else to play with. Because with that person, they feel loved. With you, they don't. So it's essential, because the large part of the mischief in relationships comes complete unawareness of how you to love them so they feel loved at the end of the day. And then there's a whole lot of areas we could segue to, but quick visit. On the 16personalities.com, you can make note of that. You'll learn your personality type. And you may find out that you are essentially a feeler or a thinker. Sheldon in Big Bang Theory is a thinker. He analyzes and figures things out cognitively, intellectually, and logically, and he doesn't pay attention to his own feelings. And sometimes people like him marry people who are feelers, who tend to process the world through their emotions first. And sometimes some people who are dedicated feel like, why do you feel that way? It's not logical. It's a yes or no answer. Why is this such a big deal? And the feeler spouse thinks, you don't care about me or my feelings. And a relationship springs a huge leak. I honor my spouse's feelings. I don't argue with them. And she honors my thought processes. So it's not about compatibility. It's about responsibility. Knowing who's listening and how they listen. It's a brief visit to personality types. There's much more to be said about that. But,
I think those personality types are huge, and I think they complement and play in with those five love languages. And so I was chuckling both on camera and off camera, because that my wife and I are thinker and feeler. And so we've had those conversations like, why are you upset right now? It's just ABC, And then I have to step back and be like, hey, knucklehead, we need to acknowledge and work through these emotions, and then we can get to the logical side. And other times she'll have to step up and be like, hey, I'm being too emotional about this, and I'm just gonna let you make the logical decision that's best. Okay, cool. And then we both feel loved, right? And we've had plenty of conflict in that area as well. So tell me more about betrayal and infidelity, because that's something that you really specialize in. Is like, people have to deal with this because they didn't know better. They didn't have a coach like you. They never learned these skills. They just fell in love, got together, and they're making it up as they go along, which I would say is way too many marriages. How do you help couples talk about betrayal? Like, if there is betrayal that's curved, sometimes every conversation can just feel like punishment or some type of denial or defensiveness. So walk us through that.
It's important to understand that infidelity is a symptom, not a cause. So rather than deal with symptoms, let's go where it comes from. That's where we go to work. And you'll love languages, personality types, distortions left over from childhood, and the whole total lack of communication skills. So all emotions, happiness, it's a symptom. It's not a thing, it's an experience. Infidelity is a symptom of something else that's been going on, maybe for a very long time, that once you ask the right question, what is it a symptom of? That's where with me we go to work. Find out that you've been misloving each other, completely oblivious to personality types and the challenges thereof, completely missing communication skills, all while trying to balance children, a career, and family. Usually family gets left last, by the way. People will compromise, exchange a piece of themselves for the sake of the us. But if you don't take care of yourself, you're not much good for us. Symptom,
Yep.
not cause.
I like that. That's a phrase that I tried to bring into all discussions is, just people in general see the result and they're trying to tackle the symptom. And in marriages, you said the phrase, you've been misloving each other. It's not that you've stopped loving each other or not been loving each other, but you're basically doing it wrong. You're not using the skills, the personality traits, you're not using the love languages. You're not using what can be developed and trained to love each other in the actual proper expressive way. So yeah, that was really good. So talking about addressing the actual cause, there probably has to be some type of apology system, more new different boundaries put in place, expectations, and I don't know if apologies and promises are appropriate without action steps and boundaries. What is that rebuilding process, that reaction and change from the infidelity and the betrayal look like?
Well, apology is one of the main subjects we approach in marriage and communication coaching. And I use the metaphor of Michelangelo and the King David statue, which people are mostly aware of. And apology is much like that of a sculptor. You don't add things, you take things away that keep you from seeing one another. So in our work at Marriage and Communication, we say, like, what behavior costs us life? Losing my temper, being critical and judgmental, not being able to express my feelings. So once we can take away those, the statue, which is your marriage, appears. So you don't have to, there's not really a repair so much as removing that which keeps us from experiencing love and relatedness. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So we're going to chisel away at all of the coarse, rough, jagged things that are in this marriage. And we're going to chisel it down into, again, each one of those is a very specific skilled stroke of the chisel and
Yes,
hammer. And maybe
exactly.
even the sandpaper gets down to the finer things. And then, of course, we're going to polish it and keep it polished and dusted off so that we maintain this structure to
Exactly.
explain metaphor. So I like that a lot. And both people have to be able to see that vision. That's where somebody like you comes in to draw us together in the same vision of our marriage, our relationship. And then you have to create a system of boundaries to chisel away the negative, bad behaviors, temptations, the causes to these symptoms, identifying, react proactively. And then again, the behavior of, hey guys, you got to deal with this like adults. So we have just a maybe 30-second answer. What are a couple of the behaviors you see that are toxic in the beginning of the apology boundary rebuilding phase where we're going to say, hey, I'm the one that's been betrayed and you're the betrayer. What is a toxic behavior you see, maybe one from each side, when trying to get started?
Could you ask that question again?
So if you have two people getting started in the repair process, betrayal has been exposed and they both want to work together through the betrayal. The person who has been betrayed might sabotage that process through a bad behavior. Same with the person trying to chisel away what caused it. Is there a behavior you can see from one side or the other where it's like, hey, this is a common toxic behavior where good-hearted people screw up and they throw this behavior in there when trying to repair?
Well, I mean, very popular, but, you know, one person feels criticized and judged.
Criticism.
And, you know, and if you keep on criticizing and judging, eventually some people, they stop communicating. Defending yourself doesn't make any good. So the person's way, which often is learned as a child, we had more time, we could go back to childhood, but, you know, at the beginning of the apology process, you identify that behavior that costs his life.
That's perfect. Let's talk about that here in just a second, because I want to get into that repair process. So let's sit tight for segment four here just a second after this commercial break on Pivotal Change. We are back with Pivotal Change, and I am back with Paul Zohav, MED. He is the founder of Marriage and Communication Coaching. And if you are liking this episode and you just missed a nugget that you want to go back and watch, go to Pivotal Change on Now Media TV's website, nowmedia.tv. You can get everything live or on demand. Just anytime you want, go download it. Get the Roku version, the iOS version, go to YouTube, get all the bilingual information you want. It's around the clock, ready whenever you are, nowmedia.tv. You'll get everything like this show and more. So, Paul, we're talking about some of the painful sides. We're talking about some of the repairs. We talked about a little bit of the habits that can basically sabotage people in the repair process. So when people get into the situation where maybe the communication stuff broke down, they didn't have the proper effort in the beginning or the proper knowledge, and they say they want peace, what usually keeps that repair from happening? Is there some type of missing bridge between like apologies and saying you're sorry versus the real repair that can happen?
Open up a big can there. First of all, we don't use the word sorry. Sorry is about you. It's not about us. We apologize, which is for two people. Apology is about the relationship. You could be ashamed or you could be responsible. You could be guilty or you could be accountable. It's a longer conversation, maybe for the next meeting we have, you and I. So the language is important. The words we use shape our experience of being alive. So we don't say, I'm sorry, thinking it's an apology. It's not. It means I regret, and it's perfectly available when you have a funeral. I'm sorry for your loss. I'm sorry your plans did not work out. But in a relationship, you're never sorry. Sorry is belongs to a kind of words that don't provide a step forward. You could say, I'll try, but that doesn't produce much results. I intend does. So we want to be very careful that we use empowering language. And another image is that, you know, when you're married, you get a ring, a license, a cake, and a party. That's it. That's the thing. But the next morning, a truck pulls up to your house and say, here, this huge block of stone. Here's your marriage. And what we do for the rest of our lives is continually work at, shape at, create something that people would admire. Oh, you want to see a marriage? Go see Williams. So, and with we don't have the skills. We don't learn good skills. And you wouldn't want to come to me to learn how to shape a marriage that'll last a lifetime.
I like that a lot. The, you know, everyone is carving an image, a sculpture of their marriage. And hey, you guys want to see it in a marriage, go look at so and so. That is a powerful thing for us to look at and say to each other, saying, hey, what's the sculpture looking like right now while we're talking to each other this way?
That's a way of looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah, you just hit me right between the eyes. I like that a lot. So people can get resistant. You know, there's going to be all kinds of personality differences and things that come in here. And some people are more prideful than the others. Some people a little more shameful than the others. What makes people resist hearing the pain in their partner? Obviously they helped create it because they caused it in some capacity. Even when they want the relationship to get better, they're just somehow resisting hearing or receiving that pain from their partner.
Well, a useful phrase is a probable, almost certain future. If nothing changes, we'll have more of the same. We'll continue down this road together until the road ends. Probable, almost certain future. If nothing changes, our marriage is toast. Like, long story short. And that's how you can introduce, well, listen, well, yes, I hear you. Let's talk about it. It's an opening to a conversation, basically. When things are going poorly, the first person knows, oh, hang on a second. Seems to me, remember, seems that we don't talk as much as we used to. Seems to me that we bring up the past again and again. Seems to me that we've lost the spark. Or what I hear often, it seems to me I've fallen out of love with you. I love you, but I'm in love with you. And when you hear that, that's a time to go to work, post haste. So there's a lot could be said at this point, but basically, if your marriage just has, if your us has sprung a leak, you'll feel it right away. Less energy, less safety, more conflict, more arguing. These are all, you know, stop signs, you know? If you're not feeling enlivened by your marriage, then you ought to be looking for how to restore it to its original status.
I like that.
More life, more life or less life. That's really the bottom line.
So that's the meter you're gauging, just like a gas tank. It's either full or empty. Is it full or more empty?
Thing. I've invented the concept return on life, ROL. I've actually trademarked it. You can, if your return on life is diminishing as part of your marriage, that's where you go to work. Why wake up to a person that you're now a roommate with? I hear people like, you become roommates. What is your return on life? What is your return on life? If you have less life, that's where you get to go to work.
I like
and
that.
You can
a lot.
Feel it. It's not hidden, it's not a secret. Your children will notice, you know. Parents tend to forget that the children are watching everything.
Yeah. Well, you have a message. Don't forget the children. That's something that's really important to you. So what do you want parents to understand about how conflict affects children in their home?
Well, children, in a way of putting it, they're creating an operating system for life. That's what they do. First, they get to learn how to manipulate their bodies. And sometimes they learn how to start speaking around 2 years of age, and then they start watching how you manage your life as a couple. And you know, one person, I watched my parents scream at each other for 2 years before they finally divorced. So children are developing an operating system for life, an operating system for relationships, and the quality of their relationships as adults has a lot to do with what they learn from you. Do not forget that even as you're duking it out with each other, loudly, angrily, you're really putting a puncture in the balloon of safety for a child. Because children like consistency. They do not like change. They enjoy boundaries. So if you're heading for divorce, don't forget that little jugs have big ears. And whether you have grandchildren may depend upon how well you manage your relationship and your parenting at the same time.
I like that. Like you said, a lot of things in there. It'd be hard to unpack it all right now, but I think that's so important to at least grasp that concept of they're building an operating system based on everything that they're observing and learning from you. And is that operating system all of this negative shouting, toxic behavior, or maybe even complete avoidance? Like you said, you're not getting grandbabies for me because your marriage was so terrible. I'm not getting married at all. And that's
It
important.
happens. Why would I want something like my parents did? I don't want a marriage like the marriage my parents had. You know, they get the wrong information when we provide them with low quality information, and they may be, I'll never get married. I'll never have children. Look at my parents.
So what should couples begin practicing so that repair continues after coaching instead of just falling back in the same old pattern and then having the pendulum swing so their kids keep seeing the same old patterns?
Starts I start at the risk of repeating myself, learn to communicate. Learn how to love the person in their love language. Learn that the challenges and opportunities of a thinker married to a feeler, which often happens, by the way. So it's not about compatibility, it's about responsibility and mutual awareness. A successful marriage is highly mutually aware. And then when something goes wrong, they go, hang on a second, this is something we get to stop and look at. It's really developed the skills of marriage and communication. And I love doing premarital, by the way. If you have someone getting married, in three sessions, they'll have what they may need to make it to their 50th wedding anniversary.
I love that. I love that. So it's just so amazing how powerful just these, and I know there's people like you talking about it and living it and walking the walk, but how it's just so, like you said, there's no R for relationship in school. And because we don't have that in school, we're not taking it outside of school. We're not really getting it in our community organizations or our churches and stuff like that. Maybe to some degree, but not in the degree where it's a concentrated crucial and pivotal skill in life. So let's do this real quick. Let's pivot because we do have to get closing the show, but I don't want people to leave here because I'm sure this audience is going to want to see and hear more of you and probably even use your services. Tell us where to find you and how to get a hold of you.
Well, you can go directly to marriageandcommunication.com. There's blogs, there are videos like this one where you can learn from me, see from me, and at the same time. And you can also go to my book, Marriage and Communication: Recipes for Life. It's formatted as a cookbook. You don't have to understand anything. You just follow the directions, get a piece of paper, get your cake. Only the cake is your life. Marriage and Communication: Recipes for Life, and I'm developing versions for my teenagers and for the world of business, because the skills
Absolutely.
are basically the same. The context is slightly different. Marriageandcommunication.com.
Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. It has been a pleasure, and I can't wait to have you back on for some more.
I would be honored.
And to the audience, I want you to go out into the world, and I want you to see the change and be the change. We'll catch you next time on Pivotal Change.